SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome in, everyone, to the Early Line. We're live right here on Sports Grid on a big time Friday. I am Kevin Walsh. That is Donnie Wrightside. Thursday night football, massive. This entire week of NFL action looks big. I'm sneaking in a little NBA. Oh, and by the way, DRS, World Series action, game number one tonight in Houston.
Yep, that's why DRS is wearing red today. Red October back in full effect. World Series game one. And forget about the matchups, K-Dub. Forget about anything that goes into it. I mean, the roofs closed games one and game two. I mean, enough with this. Enough.
Cowards. The whole lot of them. They would never stand for such cowardice in Buffalo with those new stadiums. The Astros on the series price are a minus 190 favorite. The Phils check in at plus 165. Yordan Alvarez and Bryce Harper, the top two choices to win World Series MVP for their respective teams. We will break that down at the top of hour number two, the game one preview and picks that you need at the top of hour number two. Before all of that, Thursday night football. And an I told you so, absolutely ready to go. Donnie, I told you the Bucs were going to win this game. Tom Brady, 325 yards. You know, I mean, 22 points on Thursday night, that should be good enough. Uh-oh. No, it wasn't. The Bucs defense fell apart in the second half for the second straight week, allowing 24 points to the Baltimore Ravens. The Bucs offense continues to sputter, and the Ravens win outright in a nice little Thursday night over 27-22.
Yeah, nice win for the Ravens there. You know, real gutsy second half performance, as I tweeted out, because that's Lamar Jackson down his best two weapons and still was able to move the football basically at will. 24 second half points for the Baltimore Ravens on the road at Tampa Bay. Now, Tampa Bay struggling in the secondary, a lot of injuries. Maybe Shaq Barrett done for the year with an Achilles injury, which probably will bleed even into the following year, which is a devastating loss. But there's no more excuses here for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You had your top three wide receivers all healthy, along with Leonard Fournette and Tom Brady. And you lost again and dropped the 3-5. 1-3 at home. And I know one of your talking points yesterday was they're home. They'll get right here. It looks like they were going to do that, cruising up and down the field, first drive, 75 yards, right up there. You said, all right, looks like Brady and the boys are going to be back. They completely fell apart in the second half. Brady just looks old in the pocket. And that's not even a great Baltimore Ravens defense. That's not the Ray Lewis defenses that were coming after you. That's an average defense. You lost at home. That's a terrible loss for the Bucs. But there's no more. The Bucs will get it together and get off the carpet. These are the Bucs of 2022.
Here, I thought the most damning play of this entire game. So the Bucs opened it up. They go three and out to start the second half. The Ravens, near 5 minute long touchdown drive to make this game tied up at 10-10. And the Bucs get the football back, and on third and two, Brady goes deep because, of course, he does to Mike Evans. Nothing comes in. And on fourth and two at the Ravens 47, it doesn't even look like there is any desire from any of the 11 players on that offense to go for it. It's fourth and two at the 47. Last year, that Bucs off, they don't even look at the punter. Relax. Godwin out route, no problem. Evans, he might go deep again and just throw a touchdown pass to Mike Evans on a fourth and two. They send the punter out. And the Ravens go out and get another touchdown. And that game is 17-10, and they never looked back. Our radio audience is live on this Friday morning. I'm Kevin Walsh. It's Donnie Wrightside. It's the Early Line on Sirius XM, channel 159. You know, you say this is who Tampa Bay is. This is the Bucs team that's now failed to cover in five consecutive, losing three in a row. And there are not really get-right spots on the schedule because you lost the two get-right spots coming into this game at Pittsburgh and at Carolina. The only saving grace for Tampa Bay has been the only saving grace that has been there the entire time. They play in the worst division in football. Despite sitting now at a 3-5 record, they're a minus 160 favorite to win the NFC South.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. If the Saints were just the Saints of the last decade or so, they would probably have a 2 or 3 game lead already in this division, but that's not the case here. Tampa Bay is probably going to get to the end. And also, I preface this by saying, when I say the Bucs are dead, it's the same way I take a look at the Green Bay Packers being dead. It's not to say that they're going to, you know, circle the wagons, Kevin, and go 9-8, make the playoffs. I told you you were wrong, Donnie. That's not the case. That's not what we're looking at here. It's the Bucs being able to do damage once they get into the playoffs. It's not a good football team, and you can't measure it against the teams in the division. That's not fair. They still might win this division, but this is a bad Bucs team.
The crazy of it, if they win the division, meaning that they're going to get a home playoff game, we'll then kind of be at a point where it's like, all right, well, how are they playing, right? Have they started to figure some things out? Here's the reality. They're going to have to play much better football to win this division. They're 3-5. The winner of Falcons-Panthers is in first place in the division. I know it sounds hilarious, but that's the case. On the other side of the coin quickly here, again, the question for me on Baltimore is really not if they are the fourth best team in the NFL. It's what tier are they? Are they the last team in tier number one? Are they the first team in tier number two? And I still feel like I didn't get an answer here on a Thursday night.
No, you didn't get any answer last night, because what you're seeing is it's the Lamar Jackson show. How he goes, that team goes. They just don't have enough weapons. And now his weapons are even injured. Maybe we have to wait on the Ravens till late in the season until they get right.
But you know what? Isaiah Likely, the rookie tight end out of Coastal Carolina, stepped up in a huge way as Mark Andrews exited early. Likely 677-1. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back with you here on Sports Grid, starting to take a look at this Week 8 slate in the National Football League. And Sunday Night Football is such a fascinating game. We know this. We get look-ahead lines for every game across all 18 weeks of football. And this game in Buffalo here, Bills-Packers, was -4 Buffalo. No problem. I think that makes some sense. Green Bay, we were a bit lower on. Buffalo, the Super Bowl favorites. They're at home. They're off a bye. No problem. We now get to this game, and it's 10.5. For the first time in Aaron Rodgers' career, he is going to be a double-digit underdog. And the incredible thing is, even though there will be certainly plenty of people, and I might fit this description, who say, I have to take the double digits with Rodgers, it's too much. As someone that has also come on the show screaming and yelling about some of the numbers the Buffalo Bills have laid at Kansas City, at Baltimore, and how ridiculous they were, whether they won or did not ultimately cover the numbers, I saw this 10.5 and it was, yeah, you kind of get it. Green Bay's a mess right now. And the Bills are a machine that typically, when they're rolling, are absolutely unstoppable. We've seen that a number of times this season. What are your thoughts as we see Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers with a 10.5 point spread?
Destruction, terror, and mayhem in Buffalo this weekend. And here's why I say this. It's Aaron Rodgers, it's the Packers. The MO of the past is they're a good football team, one of the best quarterbacks of all time. Now, let's lay out what's going to happen in this game. Jerry Rice, a.k.a. Alan Lazard, has not practiced this week here for the Green Bay Packers. Shoulder injury, you saw him leave the game last week. One hit from him on that turf, he's going to be out the rest of the game. Now, also, you had this week where Aaron Rodgers went through that, I guess, offensive, you know, system and the players that he's around. He goes, you guys are making way too many mistakes. And if you're making mistakes, maybe we shouldn't play you and play somebody else. Play who? Play me? Play you, Kevin? Who are you? Jay Coomer out? You going to call him up off the waiver wire and bring him back into town? There's nowhere to go for the Green Bay Packers and hide in this game. We know that the Buffalo Bills, coming off a bye, are itching to get back there in front of their fans and continue their scorched earth policy at home of blowing teams off the field. So, as we set that as a precursor, what do we think about this game on the total, 47.5? Let's analyze that. If you look at the Green Bay Packers defense, particularly the defensive backfield trying to stop the pass, it's pretty good. Well under 200 yards per game, which lines up pretty well against the Buffalo Bills because they're explosive. You say, okay, maybe that's a little bit of an equal here. But if the game plan for the Green Bay Packers is, I don't have Alan Lazard, nobody knows how to run routes, my offensive line stinks, you're not going to say, hey, Aaron, perfect game, toe-to-toe, Let's go head-to-head with Josh Allen. I got a game plan that's going to have you throwing 50 times in Buffalo. No, you don't. No, you don't. This feels to me that the Green Bay Packers are only worried about first downs and not touchdowns. The way that they possibly could win this game is to slow it down so much and you go, man, Buffalo only got the football two times in the first half. And man, look at the first drive of the second half by the Packers. 8.5 minutes, 16 plays, and they finally got to the red zone. I look at that 47.5 and say to myself, the Buffalo Bills might get into the 30s. And if they do, there's no way that the Green Bay Packers are going to be able to hang around. But if the Packers want to hang around in this game, each churn every second off of that clock. I really like the under in this game.
I like where your head's at there. If the Packers have any chance, basically what you would need is a kickoff return touchdown and a broken 75-yard touchdown from Green Bay's end to start your path towards over 47.5. But then again, they might only score a field goal on top of those two busted plays to finish the game with 17 with the way they look at times. If you look at Aaron Rodgers through his career, three times he's caught above a touchdown. He's 2-1 against the number in both of those games. No upsets, though. We have seen Rodgers perform tremendously at night under the bright lights. It makes sense. It's who he is. And he has four straight outright wins as a dog in night games. Twice he's caught six or more in prime time, and he's covered both of those games. That all kind of lines up to tell you that this is historically a Rodgers spot. If Aaron Rodgers has any more juice left, as we talk about the demise of Tom Brady to open up this show, and that demise is now, because initially it was all the wide receivers are hurt on Tampa, all the offensive linemen are hurt on Tampa, the running game.
Yeah.
Tom Brady doesn't look the same, if you're honest. I know he has moments, but over the 60-minute landscape of a football game, Tom doesn't look the same. Neither does Aaron Rodgers. But he still has his moments. And can Aaron Rodgers put together enough moments over 60 games to stay within double digits? I tend to think the answer is yes. I lean towards the Packers here. I like your play on the under. The one issue that I do have with this game, and Josh Allen is a delightful 10-3 against the number in prime time. The Bills like to flex their muscle when they can. But if this game is going into the fourth quarter, 27-13, which means the back door's open, right? But the next possession, the Buffalo Bills go and they get a touchdown, Rodgers won't even come back out trying. When Packers games get out of hand, in recent times, Rodgers taps. Man, whatever, man. We're good here. I don't think you really have breathing room to be tapping like this. It'd be your fourth consecutive loss. But that is what we have seen from Rodgers. So maybe if you like Green Bay, you have to probably get involved with a first half spread is where my head is at.
Yeah, no doubt about it, because that's where you can still stick to your guns here and keep the football on the ground. Rushing props there, maybe an Aaron Jones look in this game, because also maybe rushing and receiving combined for him if you're expecting Alan Lazard to not play or be hindered once he does play in this football game. There's not a lot of weapons. That's what you're getting after. Like when you go to Buffalo, like in your Kansas City, Mahomes, five legitimate wide receivers, best tight end in football. Yeah, you know what? Let's flip that coin out there for the start of the game. Let's get after it. Like Aaron Rodgers is coming into this game going, I'm looking over on that side. He's got Stephon Diggs. I look at all the talent that's over on that other side here. He's got emerging number two, number three wide receivers. And I got Romeo Doubs that I was hyping up. And now every meeting I go to going, Romeo, it's an out route, 5 yard out, not a slant. Okay, get it together. Got it, Aaron. Next play out there. I told you, 5 yard out, not a slant. I mean, that's what's going on. Forget about like excelling on the football field. These guys don't even know the playbook according to what's going around. And shout out to whatever sources in Green Bay go, yeah, you know what? Everybody was fine with Aaron Rodgers going around the locker room and peppering those guys. Because as if Romeo Doubs came out in the public, because, man, Aaron Rodgers came in the meeting yesterday, said I was running the wrong routes. Man, he stinks. Like, he's going to say that because he can say that. Stop it. So I don't know what's going on behind closed doors here, but this has the looks of, as I said on Monday and Tuesday, a game that Aaron Rodgers won't finish. Not because he's basically even playing bad. It's because the game is out of reach and he's bruised and battered. And what's the point?
One thing I'm very interested in into the specifics of this matchup, and it points to, towards your under, I think, even more so. Green Bay defensively is at their worst against the run. I mean, they are abysmal on the ground. The Bills like to throw the ball when the game is tied. If they're trailing, if they're up 7, up 14, up 21, up 20, they just let Josh Allen rip that thing the entire game. That isn't really the best way. Now, again, Josh Allen and this offense is so high-powered, they might just rip Green Bay to shreds regardless, because that's kind of what we've seen from this football team. But if they're going to run the ball, because that's where Green Bay is vulnerable, then some of your Devin Singletary props get very fascinating to me. Even the Josh Allen rushing props get pretty interesting here. I wonder if Buffalo almost has enough self-control to attack Green Bay DRS where they are at their weakest.
Yeah, Josh Allen running out of the pocket as well. Sneaky also, tight end look here. Dawson Knox plus 175, anytime touchdown. Those secondary options are live here. But I do think the Buffalo Bills win by margin, but also I think the game stays under the total. I really do.
Yeah, again, that 47.5. The Green Bay Packers are currently a dog to make the playoffs. If this game goes the way the number suggests, that number will only be increasing. Tides changing in the NFC. We'll be back after a quick break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back to right here on the early line, continuing to look at week 8 in the National Football League. We go from the Buffalo Bills, the favorites in the AFC, to the Philadelphia Eagles, the favorites in the NFC, both laying similar numbers. This week here, the Eagles check in up against the Pittsburgh Steelers. At the moment, laying the same number, a 10.5 here at home off of a bye. Low total, though, 43.5. The total almost feels like it doesn't match the spread in a way. Like, we just talked about this Bills-Packers game, right? That 47.5. When you have a big spread like that, there's some implications that the favorite has to go very, very high, and maybe the dog can do enough. I think it shows, one, respect the Eagles' defense is getting, but also just kind of the look on Pittsburgh and a young Kenny Pickett is that that team just doesn't have enough juice. What do you think here, Eagles-Steelers?
Yeah, I do think the Eagles win by margin in this game, too. And it's a back-to-back games. We're talking about, you know, over 10 points where, hey, that back door could be open. Teams are just worrying about winning. You don't worry about covering the spread as an NFL team, per se. But I do think the Eagles are in a good spot here. You're also looking at the Philadelphia Eagles coming off of a bye week, which now is going to get back Lane Johnson, maybe the best right tackle in football. Landon Dickerson looks like he's going to be healthy. And also Jordan Mailata, who did play the last game we saw, and also played that hindrance there with a shoulder injury, which he said range of motion so much better over the past 2 weeks than what it was. So if you're getting a full gas Eagles team that now is Robert Quinn also coming off of the edge, it doesn't really bowl well here for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I do think there's some opportunities to make some money with the Steelers. Now, case in point also, 43.5 does seem low. If we look at the Eagles offense, one of the best in the NFL, going up against the Pittsburgh Steelers defense. Usually, Kevin, what do we think about with the Pittsburgh Steelers defense? Top 5 in the NFL, get after it, nasty pass rushers, tough linebackers, good secondary, Mike Tomlin coach team. I understand it. This isn't the same Steelers that we're used to here. And also with a rookie quarterback, which I like sometimes, Kevin, when rookie quarterbacks are put in these spots, it's not to say they're going to excel and that's what you need for them to get the over 43.5. Sometimes it's making mistakes, boom or bust. They have some legitimate wide receivers, a very good running back, a decent tight end, where I can see Kenny Pickett moving the football, but the time of the interception is going to be key. The interception on their own 25, fantastic for the total. The interception on the red zone going in, terrible for the total. But if I'm going to say to myself, it's 43.5 that we're looking at a total here, I lean towards the over in this spot because I do think the Eagles will be at least in the high 20s in this ballgame. There's no governor. There's no throttle. There's no, you know, brake pad here for the Eagles. They're coming off a bye. They're here to win and reassert their dominance in the NFL. But having said that, I do think there's some spots here for Kenny Pickett, even like some of the prop bets, low numbers, 216 as a passing prop, but also in this game, we'll go over some props in a little bit. I'm looking at Freiermuth and also an Eagles running back situation that looks pretty good as well.
I'll say for me, we're going to do the alt, obviously pick six, hour number two. Yeah. I was trying to figure out if I could do an alt Eagles team total. I wasn't able to find it here, at least earlier in the week. I think they're into the 30s in this game. I think this is a spot where you're going to see their offense really thrive. Yeah. The Pittsburgh Steelers defense is still waiting for the return of TJ Watt. The over is 7-1, by the way, in the last eight Eagles home games. So that's important. Who else are they waiting on the return of?
I mean, probably the most famous, you know, non-guest we've ever had on the early line, Larry O. I mean, doubtful to play this weekend. I mean, that's a huge, that's a, what's that, two points, 3 points for the Steelers? I mean, Larry O doesn't go?
I mean, is it true that Larry O actually might not play because he's trying to just make his way to the early line and be a third chair? People are asking the important questions.
People are asking, should be the second chair with another guy.
Wow, looks like you're tapping out. Tough scene there. Anyway, some other numbers here. The Philadelphia Eagles are 6-0 ATS in the first half this season. But here's where I think the number really jumped off the page to me as I continue to pile up some of this research here. Unbeaten teams at home off a bye, 14-2 against the number in the last 20 years. That's dominant. That's absolutely dominant. And I think this is a spot where the Eagles can cover this number, whether it's 21-10 or 31-10. I think this is a great spot to back the Philadelphia Eagles here. To me, they are the team that I'm most looking to get involved with. Was there anything else from the props market you wanted to mention before we moved on from this game?
Yeah, and anytime touchdown market makes a lot of sense here. You know, Hurts probably is a really good shot. I mean, he's one of the best runners in the NFL scoring touchdowns, right, which is insane that he's a quarterback. He's got six on the season. But I'm going to look towards Miles Sanders, a plus 120 price in anytime touchdown. I think that works. Kenny Pickett to some degree, like the 216, I think he goes over because in my mind, unless Mike Tomlin is just, you know, flying off the handle at this point, it's Kenny Pickett's team. You got to let him sink or swim. You play an upper echelon team on the road, you want to see how he responds. Even if they're down three touchdowns in the third or fourth quarter, he's going to be throwing the football. But how about this? Pat Freiermuth here, over 34.5. It's going to come in around that 35 number. Why is that important? Look at the last three games. One of these games, he had a concussion. But against the Jets, 7 catches, 85 yards. Got a concussion against the Bills and only finished with 12 yards, but then comes back against the Dolphins 2 weeks later, 8 catches for 75 yards. As we know in football, if you're a young quarterback, the easiest passes to make are to the running back and the tight end. Why? They're going to be the closest to you. So if they're losing in this game, I think Freiermuth has a really good shot to get 50 yards and beyond. If you're going to find him in that mid-30s range, I think that's a steal this weekend.
I don't mind that look. I'm going to be looking. We'll talk in our pick six a little bit about a Jalen Hurts number that to me is quite enticing. So we'll keep our eyes on that. I figure we're talking about the birds, right? The top of the NFC. The Minnesota Vikings are knocking on that door, though. The only loss the Vikings have this year was in Philadelphia on Monday Night Football. And I feel like to some degree, Vikings fans might say that's not fair. You played Kirk Cousins on a Monday night. You know that doesn't count. Play a Sunday at 1 o'clock where the lights aren't so bright. You've got the Vikings laying a 3.5 number here. Big time total 48.5. The Vikings are off a bye. The Cardinals are off a mini bye. DeAndre Hopkins back in the fold. Didn't miss a beat. And as the Arizona Cardinals, upon his return, it just felt like a different team. They average 10 more points per game when he is around. Their record with him is—it's just everything is better with DeAndre Hopkins around. Do you think this is a spot where they can keep the good times rolling here with Nuke Hopkins?
I do think they can keep some of the good times rolling on offense because you're also taking a look at any time. And granted, you know, both of these teams are dome teams, but I love the fact that sometimes I get Kyler Murray on turf because I just see, like, you know, snap the football, pass rush comes. How do you tackle the guy on turf? Like, has he ever been sacked? I know he has, but I'm just being facetious here. But it feels like there's no way that the Minnesota Vikings defense will be able to catch him on turf, which means he's going to run around 100 miles an hour, buy extra time to find D-Hop down the field. But if we're looking overall at this game, let's take a look at Minnesota. We talk so much about, like, the Giants and their record. Like, hey, are they a good football team? Are they just getting lucky? Nobody even talks about the Minnesota Vikings. And as you bring up, they have one loss in the season. It's not as if, like, man, that was a really bad loss. They went on the road to Jacksonville and took a beat there. You know, they played the Houston Texans. They couldn't even beat them. No, they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday night in Philadelphia as their only loss in the season. It seems like if there's under the radar, this team doesn't even show up on a broken radar, it seems like, at this point now. So if I'm looking at that line, is it a little bit disrespectful to the Minnesota Vikings right now, as you say it? Are people just saying to themselves, we don't trust the Vikings, there's not enough talk? Because even at the FanDuel Sportsbook, Kevin, this line opened up at 5.5. Now sits at 3.5 here. I do agree we're more likely to get points than not. But I think we're shortchanging the Minnesota Vikings at home in this game, because that spread is there, and I know you can win, but you can lose by the hook. Hey, they won 24-21. You still got a cover from Arizona. But when I look at lines that are below, let's just say 4, 5, 6, and 7, around that 3 number, you're basically just picking the team to win the football game. And it feels to me like Minnesota's really being disrespected in this one.
I can't agree with that. Minnesota beats the Chicago Bears. No cover. They beat the New Orleans Saints. No cover. They beat the Detroit Lions. No cover. Donnie, they're 2-4 against the number this year. They've continued to win games without covering. It sounds very Minnesota Vikings to me, where this game is decided by a late field goal either direction. They do not blow teams out. They are basically in. They did blow out the Green Bay Packers in week number one. I mean, boy, again, if that doesn't speak to the volumes of broken for that team. But outside of that, winning by 4 at home against Detroit in comeback fashion, we have not seen the Vikings blow teams out. And this is not a spot that typically backing Kirk Cousins has worked out. He's 2-5 against the number off of a bye. So it's not been beneficial. At minimum, you can fade him off of a bye, but at minimum, you can't tell me you're backing him because he's on a bye week. He's been losing money if that's what you've been doing with him. Kyler Murray has been tremendous against the number on the road with Cliff Kingsbury and as well as a dog. I think there's a chance that the Cardinals pull off the outright upset here. That's how important DeAndre Hopkins is. We think back to who this team was last season with Hopkins. They were big favorites to win the NFC West. They were near the top of the leaderboard in the overall NFC and Super Bowl markets. And Kyler Murray was a legitimate MVP option. And look at what Kyler Murray brought to the table last week. It was the first time that MVP Kyler felt back to any degree. It's part of the reason, you know, you look at the NFC West, and we have Rams Niners this week with a 4-3 Seattle team. And now this Arizona team that has juice here sitting at 3-4. We'll see what they can pull off this week. I think because the NFC North is a bit wrapped up based on what the odds tell us here with Minnesota. But the NFC West is an absolute gauntlet to figure out right now.
No, it is. And I hear all your points, and they make some sense. But even if we're taking a look at this game, as I said, it's not a 7.5-point line. It's not a 10.5-point line. It's 3.5. If we're looking at the games where the Minnesota Vikings won easily over the Green Bay Packers, by 4 over the Lions, which would be a cover, 3 against the Saints, which would not cover the 3.5, 7 at the Bears, 8 against the Dolphins. Like, they're going to win a game. You just have to pick the winner. And if I'm picking the Vikings as a winner, I think they cover the 3.5.
You can't say that it's a cover when it's not a cover. You can't do that. That's terrible. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back in to the early line, going over some week 8 lines here to open up hour number 1. We've got World Series preview coming to start off hour number 2, so don't go anywhere just yet. We've got to start this conversation because we just talked a little Vikings Cardinals, and Arizona's in this heated NFC West. Rams Niners for that division is obviously the biggest game. It's one of the biggest games I think this week has to offer. Because it's such a big game for the winner, but to be honest, it feels like this will be about the loser. Either the Niners will then have lost a third consecutive game and will find themselves sitting at 3-5, though a lot of teams right now sit at that number that had expectations. But I feel like it would almost be more damning for the Rams. You're off a bye. We've been wondering when you'd get right. If you lose this game, it's as if to say, You have zero chance to ever beat this team, even though you beat them last year in an NFC Championship game. I don't know if it matters who this would be more embarrassing for, the loss, or who this would be more detrimental to, but it's a huge game here. The Niners are favored in the game. And I do believe that all of this historical stuff is why. I think that you are seeing the Niners lay 1.5 because of the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo has never lost to the Los Angeles Rams in the regular season.
Yeah, just ride it out. And we've seen it time and time again. One of those trends that does make sense for all intents and purposes, Kyle Shanahan owning Sean McVay, which is interesting because they're both two good football teams. You figure they would at least trade punches back and forth, and that hasn't been the case. But if you argue the bigger win may have been the Rams last year. Why? Because it propelled them on to a Super Bowl championship. But the one thing I can't help but look at this game, you know, Swiss Army knife there, Kyle Juszczyk, busted up finger, probably not going to go in this game. But also Deebo Samuel, who has a hamstring injury, hasn't practiced all this week. A bye week looming here. It would be almost criminal if Deebo Samuel played in this football game. And also, what do we look at Deebo Samuel? He's not an offensive guard. We say, hey, man, we just need you inside the trenches. Run 2 or 3 feet, get back to the huddle, and that's all we need you to do. Deebo Samuel is built on throw me the football, let me make 65 jump cuts each and every way across this football field and see if I can score a touchdown. He's done it on a week-to-week basis. All it takes for one move in the wrong direction, and Debo's out for 3 and 4 weeks here, and then your season starts to turn in turmoil, which leads me down the road to there's a reason why you got Run CMC, Christian McCaffrey, in the backfield. This is the week I do believe they unleash him. But if we're looking, I think they're, again, talking about the disrespect market, which I think Minnesota was disrespected. Same thing here with the Rams. The Rams are getting disrespected with this price right here. This isn't the 6-0, 6-1, 5-2 San Francisco 49ers coming to town. This is barely a team that's hovering around the 500 record.
It's a fascinating spot because I don't think I disagree that the Rams are being disrespected, but I really believe that this is a number completely driven by the jerseys, by the team that they are playing. And it's not to say, it's not the guys that are wearing the uniforms. It's just the fact that the Niners own this team right now and how long that's been going, right? We sometimes bring up the percentages that you see on the FanDuel Sportsbook. 69% of the bets are on the Niners. You know, you're offering up, right, the defending Super Bowl champs at a plus price in their own building. People aren't betting that. People are betting the fact that the Niners own this team. One big thing, and we'll see when we get this information, whether that's, you know, today from an Ian Rappaport or Sunday morning from a Jay Glazer, how much work will Christian McCaffrey get is maybe the defining thing to me on this game. Is CMC ready for an 85% workload? If so, that might be enough to get me on the Niners because I think they're going to need that. I agree. I don't think Deebo plays. You need CMC, and that's as a runner and as a pass catcher here in this game. Last note, the total's 42.5. Divisional unders this year, hitting it well above 70%. There's 5 games this week that are in-division matchups. And again, these games have just been all playing to the under so far here early season. To then go to the team that is in first place in this division, the Seattle Seahawks. And they're playing a team whose record is even more surprising, and the 6-1 New York Giants. The will just find a way Giants, who have won all of their games booked as an underdog. It's really impressive. 6-1, but they're catching 3 here in Seattle. DK Metcalf, questionable. I feel like more so unlikely, but questionable. We just saw Kadarius Toney traded out of New York, sent over to Kansas City. He was never playing in this game anyway. Total's 44.5. What do you make here of Seahawks-Giants?
Yeah, it seems like a battle of the ground games here. And DK Metcalf's not going to play in this weekend either. I mean, I'm not a doctor, I understand it, but you're getting carted off, you're getting x-rays and MRIs and injured knees and nobody's practicing. You're not going to put him out on the field on a Sunday. And also, Pete Carroll talking about, oh, we should all play on grass fields, which I do agree with. Well, you're not playing on a grass field this weekend. You're playing on turf, which is going to be extra angry for that knee if DK Metcalf even tries to get out there. But let's take a look again. The Giants. Are they being disrespected? 3-point dogs here on the road. Not necessarily. It's a tough place to play. And if there is a home field advantage in the NFL, Seattle certainly has one. Now, the home field advantage we thought might wane a little bit because we expected, at least I expected, the Seattle Seahawks to be a terrible football team, but they're not. So the fans are still going to show up and be excited and loud. I thought maybe by this time where they had maybe one or two wins, like, hey, you know what, let's sell our tickets to Giants fans and off we go. But that's not the case. They'll be engaged in this football game overall. But if we're looking from a betting perspective, what do both of these teams do well in offense, Kevin? Run the football. Seattle, $150 a game. Giants, $145. How about the defenses here? Getting after it, running, but 173 and 137. The defensive statistics, 144 and 149. So both teams can run. Neither team can defend the run. I think that's where this game is going to be won. So if you are a prop bettor, Saquon Barkley is going to be certainly in play. Daniel Jones is certainly going to be in play from a rushing perspective. Kenneth Walker is also going to be on display there and a possible play for the Seattle Seahawks in this game. If we're looking at a total perspective, mid-40s, I do think this game actually goes over. I don't love the Giants offense, but Seattle doesn't have a very good defense stopping the run or stopping the pass, and the Giants also leave something to be desired. It's a shame that DK Metcalf's probably not going to play in this game, because that would be a big boon there where you could possibly get downfield and also open up that running game even more for Seattle. But I look at this as well and I say, I'm not sure if the Giants can win this game. I'm still not sure if the Giants are actually a good football team, but they're getting 3 points. They're going to show up in my pick six here. I got to ride the Giants. If you're going to give me the Giants with the points, fool's gold, man, to keep taking them until that fool's gold runs out.
I mean, it's obviously worked tremendously all year long. I thought that this was just too good to pass up bringing up. The Seahawks are 6-1 against the spread in the first half. The Giants are 6-1 against the spread in the second half.
Yeah.
You already see how this plays out, right? It's a one possession lead for Seattle at the break. And the Giants knock on the door all second half long. If you listen on Moneyline, our great producer, JP, has somehow fallen in love with a market of the team that wins the first half and then the opponent proceeds to go ahead and win the football game. The Seahawks to be leading at the end of one and the Giants to still win outright is 8-1, if you're so interested. We'll see what kind of game Kenneth Walker brings up. He's now moved to the favorite to an offensive rookie of the year amid his breakout and the injury that took place to the New York Jets rookie running back, Breece Hall. Continuing to look at some other games here on this slate, the Dallas Cowboys host the Chicago Bears. They do so as a legitimate favorite here of 9.5. Total is 42.5. Very likely no Ezekiel Elliott for this game. Makes Tony Pollard props very interesting to me. We'll see what happens when those are posted. But the Chicago Bears and Justin Fields are piping hot. A Monday night beatdown of the New England Patriots. Can the Bears do it again, or at least do enough to cover 9.5?
I don't think they can. I think this game has a lot of feel to what we saw last week against the Detroit Lions. Now, two different ball clubs there get it after two different ways on offense, where Justin Fields had a nice night passing, which, again, you have to temper your expectations. What gate he had at Justin Fields? Oh, my goodness, what a great game. Well, typically, you're looking for 280 and beyond. But if I'm looking here, Dallas has a very good defense, both, you know, defending the pass and a decent team against the run. But it's going to come down to me for the offense of the Dallas Cowboys. Whether Zeke plays or doesn't play doesn't have any bearing in this game. Tony Pollard, fully capable and, quite frankly, a better overall running back than Zeke Elliott at this time in his career. But what I'm looking for the Dallas Cowboys, starting quarterback here, Dak Prescott. Last week, a little bit rusty there, not calling his plays in the red zone. Now that maybe Zeke Elliott doesn't play, Mike McCarthy doesn't get the phone call from Jerry Jones. I pay that running back a lot of money. Make sure you hand him the football. Okay, so that's not going to happen. Maybe Pollard gets it, or even more touchdown passes here from Dak, which he's probably going to be around that 1.5 touchdown pass market, low number, minus 120, minus 125 to throw two. We'll see how that pertains. But if I'm looking at it from a Cowboys perspective, they're much better. They're much, much better than the Chicago Bears. And what's the ceiling on Justin Fields when we see his pass prop? 175-ish in this game? That's not going to get it done. I don't think you're going to be able to move it up and down the field like you did against the New England Patriots and capitalize on errors. I do think Dallas should be locked in. The price seems high. Most people always like to say, like, my dad would look at this game and go, that's too many points to give the Bears. I'm not so sure about that. Dallas winning by 10 points, I really can see that.
Yeah, I can as well. I came across this, and I have to tell you, it brought a gigantic smile to my face. Here on the early line, a house of honesty, we call out Dak Prescott for what he is. A bit overrated. Needs perfect set of circumstances. How about this, DRS? Dak Prescott's ATS cover percentage against teams that are below 500, 73.3%.
Ooh,
Dak Prescott against teams above 500, 37.8%. Sounds about right. And sounds like a spot where Dak Prescott runs it up against a really bad Chicago Bears team still. He's 7-2 against the number when they are a touchdown-plus favorite in Dallas. I agree. I think it's a Dak week. I'll say this, too. Don't be a scorned better. And I'm talking to you specifically, DRS. I think Dak over 1.5 passing touchdowns. We'll see what the juice is. But I think he gets back. I think he gets home this week. It feels like a nice spot to come back to Dak in that market.
I mean, if Zeke doesn't play, I mean, does that just feel like a run-to-the-window type game? You don't have to watch it. He gets two in the first half. They're inside the five. They're not hammering the football to Zeke anymore. Keep an eye on that situation. And by the way, why would Zeke even play? Bad knee. Yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to give it a go. Who are these doctors out here? Like, who are they? I don't know.
Someone made the point to me that he's concerned that they're going to tell Zeke, you know, Ravi, you sure you don't want to shut it down? Because they're going to see what it looks like to give Tony Pollard 20 carries. And they're going to be like, oh, this is electric. And I can't believe we haven't been doing this the whole way. Do I sneak in Falcons-Panthers, or is that disrespectful to that game? Do we have enough time for Falcons-Panthers? According to your eyes, this is too much.
We got enough.
This is too much. Time for Falcons Panthers. Hey, this is for first place in the NFC South. Have
Algier,
a little respect.
Just give it to Algier. End the story. Game over. They win. There you go.
I mean, which team's he on? Falcons are laying 4. Totals 41. I knew you'd like that one. Totals 41 and a half here. I love the Falcons in this game. I can't believe that this number's 4. The Carolina Panthers last week get a fraudulent win over the Bucs. That's not who they are. That's not who they're going to be. The Falcons off of their first non-cover. I think it's all Falcons.
By the way, interesting point here. I'm snooping around a little bit. The touchdown props for the quarterbacks, both at a half of a touchdown pass. That lets you know how big time this game's going to be. Oof.
Yeah, that 41.5 looks about 30 points too high. We'll come back and get you some NFL news and notes as we button up our number one on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Closing out hour number one, some news from yesterday around the wide receiver position. Ja'Marr Chase could be heading to the IR with a hip injury. Certainly will not be playing on Monday Night Football against the Cleveland Browns. Cincinnati still, though, a favorite in that game above a field goal upon last check. 45.5 is your total. We also got the Kadarius Toney trade to finally happen. For a 3rd and a 6th, some are calling it a haul. Others are calling it an insignificant return. But nevertheless, Kadarius Toney has made his way to the Kansas City Chiefs, the former first-rounder selected by the prior New York Giants regime. I've decided I'll pose it this way. Which one of these stories is a bigger deal, Kadarius Toney or Ja'Marr Chase?
Obviously, it's going to be Ja'Marr Chase, but, you know, the haul of draft picks. The only haul that you got was a U-Haul shipping him from the Giants over to Kansas City at this point. Like, we were talking about yesterday on the radio. We have to start defining our terms, what a haul means. Like, when you look back at the Herschel Walker deal, it was like 17 players involved. Yeah, the Cowboys got a haul, but a 3rd and a 6th is not a haul. That's just some, hey, look at that little blip in the middle of the night. But let's get to Ja'Marr Chase here. I was just saying at the beginning of the week, boy, look at this. Has Cincinnati really turned the corner now? The offense in the 30s, back-to-back games. It looks like, you know, no more rust out there or wear and tear coming off for Joe Burrow off that offseason where he had the appendectomy. And I thought this was ready to kick into high gear. And my goodness, 4 to 6 weeks without Chase here. The offense will still move the football. They got other solid pieces, but he was that engine that opened everything up, a big play at any moment. That's a devastating, you know, defeat, I would say, for the Cincinnati Bengals. Maybe opens up the door here now for the Cleveland Browns if they ever wanted to get it together with what we see what the Ravens are doing as well. That's a tough Ja'Marr Chase. That's a bad one, man. That's a bad, bad loss.
You know, you just said that with Zeke, what are the doctors doing? Ja'Marr Chase was injured at halftime of this game, and as they had their 28-17 lead, they clearly would have done whatever they needed to against the Falcons, whether he played or not. Why was Ja'Marr Chase playing in the second half of this football game? There's no way it made it better. I'll tell you that much there. That'll maybe reevaluate some docs across the National Football League. Yeah. All right, we started off with the World Series preview next.